As well as from Montgomery, Alabama, Marilena Incapié, Executive Director of National Immigration Law Center. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7. The time is 4:59. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News, but first this message from KBOO. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from Levin & Levine, LLP, attorneys specializing in personal injury law. Levin & Levine offices are located in Southeast Portland and Old Town Sherwood. More information available by phone at 503-946-8708 and online at levinandlevine.com.
You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. You are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The events committee meets the third Monday of every month at 5 o'clock p.m.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a public affairs director to manage public affairs programming, ensuring that it is of the highest quality and consistent with the KBOO programming charter. For this 32 hours position, we are looking for someone with production experience in community radio, who has communication and training skills, and the ability to work independently in a fast-paced work environment. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. Deadline to apply is Friday, October 25th at 5 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm/PADHIRE2019.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland has reached its highest recorded rate of homeless deaths.
Mayor Ted Wheeler announced yesterday that he is running for re-election.
And in international news, Kurdish people continue facing violence from Turkish forces as the U.S. has withdrawn military support.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 16th, 2019. I'm Claire Rosciato.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. In 2018, at least 92 homeless people died in Portland, the highest number ever recorded in the city and a conservative estimate released by Multnomah County. Today, Street Roots Executive Director Kiasa Sand wrote about the rising number of people dying on the streets of Portland each year. Sand is calling for immediate action, writing, quote, "This report demands we take measure of the lives lost on the streets." The Street Roots Executive Director stresses that the housing is a form of health care that provides a safe space to heal. And in her call to action, she explains why housing is so crucial to one's health. Sand writes, quote, "Housing is health care. A door with a lock and a key creates a space to be safe, the autonomy to heal, and the ability to hold on to sentimental belongings that nourish the spirit. There is so much heartache from people who have lost family photos or parents' ashes when their belongings are swept up like trash," end quote. Just yesterday, Mayor Ted Wheeler stated in his reelection speech that his top priority is addressing the homeless crisis in Portland. It remains to be seen what that entails by Portland's political leader. From the time Street Roots and Multnomah County began working together in 2011 to release these death counts, 530 people died, and of those living specifically on the streets of Portland, Black people died at a higher rate.
Yesterday, Mayor Ted Wheeler announced that he is running for re-election. Portland has not yet had a mayor in recent years run for a second term since three-term Mayor Vera Katz. As Wheeler made his announcement on the rooftop of an ad agency building, he told the crowd, quote, "I am officially announcing my re-election campaign for mayor, the City of Roses." The crowd then briefly chanted, "Ted." As the mayor presented his case for another 4 years in office, he made it clear that his top priority is addressing the homelessness crisis in Portland. He explained that homelessness is a complex issue tied to poverty, access to housing, mental health, and addiction. Wheeler discussed other social problems, such as the much-needed construction for crumbling infrastructure. Throughout his speech, he noted the ups and downs of the city and tied in his accomplishments before taking office, saying, quote, You know what my record was when I served as the Multnomah County Chair and later as the state treasurer and now as your mayor," he said. "I have always worked tirelessly to build a solid foundation beneath our community."
Portland State University just announced that it will receive a $277,000 grant from the SNAP program. 50 students will get wraparound support this year from the funds, according to Willamette Week, and PSU has plans to, quote, hire a new full-time case manager tasked with connecting vulnerable students with resources and to award reimbursements to eligible students for things such as fees, tuition, books, clothing, childcare, and transportation, end quote. However, this funding is only for a single year. The Homeless Research and Action Collaborative, or HRAC, co-director Jason Green says the SNAP funds are what is known as a matching grant, and that the university will be looking for a funding partner to, quote, supply 50% of the grant for next year, which would then be matched by the federal government if awarded.
Late last Friday evening, the UFCW Local 555 Union announced the ratification of a new three-year contract, along with wage increases for all workers. There is improved contract language regarding vacation requests and new technologies. The three-year contract will have expanded health benefits, a 20-hour work week guarantee, and improved pension and retirement options. The union's webpage says, quote, about the contract, "The agreement comes after 16 months of often tense employer negotiations tempered by enormous community support on behalf of union members." Local 55 was formed in 1985 by the merging of five other locals, and boasts a community of 25,000 workers and their families in the healthcare, manufacturing, and retail industries.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for some great in-depth reporting. At 6, it's Free Culture Radio. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be showers with a low of 52. Tomorrow's weather will be rain with a low of 49. Today in history, it is International Pronouns Day. To make it commonplace for every person's personal pronouns, regardless of gender identity, to be respected and shared. The quote of the day is from actress and LGBTQ advocate Laverne Cox, who said, quote, "We are not what other people say we are. We are who we know ourselves to be, and we are what we love. That's okay."
On Tuesday afternoon, an explosion and fires broke out at the NuStar Energy facility in Crockett, California. Tanks holding 250,000 gallons of ethanol erupted into intense flames, which threatened the nearby area and sent thick plumes of black smoke high into the sky. The only reported injury is from a firefighter. Workers in the facility at the time of the explosion were unharmed. It took 7 hours for firefighters to get containment of the blaze. The incident also caused the major I-80 freeway to be shut down for several hours in both directions, causing significant traffic jams. ABC 7 reports, quote, that all operations have been suspended and shipments halted at the facility today, end quote, while officials begin an investigation to determine whether or not yesterday's 3.5 magnitude earthquake played in part in causing the explosion.
Today, 12 women who graduated from the New York School for the Deaf, also known as Fanwood, filed a suit against the school for sexual abuse. All 12 women who attended the school during the 60s and 70s say that they were abused by the dormitory housemaster. The school was designed similarly to a boarding school where the children spent each day and night of the week at the school. At the over 200-year-old school, the women recount that as students, they would attend their classes, finish homework, and then, they say, the abuse would start. It became routine for the women, who at the time were as young as 4 years of age. Back in a time with even less visibility for deaf people, communicating that abuse was a challenging and daunting thought, even for the women who had a deaf parent. They were scared and carried these stories into adulthood. Today, these 12 women who have bravely shared their stories are able to file a suit in the state of New York because of a recently passed legislation called Child Victims Act. This act is especially crucial for the deaf community, whose abuse is far less reported and at least 25% more likely to occur.
Last night's Democratic debate, candidates covered several issues from gun buybacks, health care, to women's reproductive rights. In contrast to debates over the past months, the candidate to beat was Senator Elizabeth Warren. Many candidates weren't shy about taking shots at the senator, who was rising up in the polls. For more on this story, it's 2020 Talks with Lori Bulkey.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process from the studios of KHOI in the heart of Iowa.
But I want to give a reality check here to Elizabeth, because no one on this stage wants to protect billionaires, not even the billionaire. We just have different approaches. Your idea is not the only idea.
And sometimes I think that Senator Warren is more focused on pitting some part of the country against the other instead of lifting people up.
That was Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar and former Texas Representative Beto O'Rourke setting their sights on Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren at last night's fourth Democratic debate in Westerville, Ohio. Warren clearly replaced former Vice President Joe Biden as the center stage target. She was undaunted in her call for structural change.
I'm not willing to give up and let a handful of monopolists dominate our economy and our democracy. It's time to fight back.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders didn't face as much heat, except on his proposed overhaul of the healthcare system.
Senator Sanders, do you want to respond?
I get a little bit tired, I must say. A people defending a system which is dysfunctional, which is cruel.
South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg sparred with Hawaii Representative Tulsi Gabbard on the role of U.S. troops supporting Kurds in Syria. Gabbard said that the U.S. should not have been involved in regime change in Syria to begin with, and here's how Buttigieg responded.
Look, I didn't think we should have gone to Iraq in the first place. I think we need to get out of Afghanistan. But it's also the case that a small number of specialized special operations forces and intelligence capabilities were the only thing that stood between that part of Syria and what we're seeing now, which is the beginning of a genocide and the resurgence of ISIS.
Buttigieg also had a more heated exchange with Beto O'Rourke regarding the practicality of a mandatory buyback program for assault weapons. Former HUD Secretary Julian Castro took that opportunity to address the recent police shooting of a Tatiana Jefferson in her own home in Fort Worth, Texas.
I am not going to give these police officers another reason to go door to door in certain communities, because police violence is also gun violence, and we need to address that.
Reproductive rights surfaced in the context of Supreme Court nominations and in the wake of recent state abortion bans. Here's New Jersey Senator Cory Booker.
Women should not be the only ones taking up this cause and this fight. It's because women are people, and people deserve to control their own bodies.
Tulsi Gabbard shared the field's unanimous support for Roe v. Wade. She and Klobuchar backed some restrictions on third trimester abortions.
I agree with Hillary Clinton on one thing, disagree with her on many others, but when she said abortion should be safe, legal, and rare, I think she's correct.
From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bulkey.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lund.
Work or go to jail appears to be the sentiment of Los Angeles to its residents, who find themselves at the mercy of the court when they are unable to pay fines. A first-of-its-kind study conducted by UCLA and reported on by The Guardian looked at court-mandated community service and found that, quote, government departments and not-for-profit organizations rely on workers threatened with debts and jail time to complete labor that would otherwise be paid, and that those affected are overwhelmingly people of color, end quote. The study found that the government agencies relied on roughly 3 million hours of unpaid labor from court-mandated community service, which is the rough equivalent of 1,800 jobs. It also found that LA County residents performed about 8 million hours of unpaid work over a year, the equivalent of nearly 5,000 jobs. The concept of community service was initially introduced as a way for those charged with infractions of the law to pay their debt to society without going into debt themselves. Yet, majority of community service positions do not pay a wage, which often forces people to, quote, pay to work for free, especially since there are initial fees to receive their community service referrals, which can cost more than $100. The UCLA study found that the majority of defendants are still forced to make payments averaging $323, and that nearly one in five people sentenced to community service ultimately faces a probation violation or arrest warrant for failing to complete their service hours by the deadlines given by the court. The in-depth study also discovered that in the LA County Traffic Court, where community service is the most common sentence, 89% of the defendants were people of color. Noah Zatz, a UCLA law professor, says, quote, there's this invisible economy that is being produced out of the criminal justice system. Normally, it's unconstitutional to threaten people with jail if they don't work. This is a government-run system of extraction that is targeting communities of color and low-income communities.
NASA just unveiled the prototype suits for the first female walk on the moon. The two new spacesuits were designed for the Artemis program, which aims to land, quote, land the first woman and next man on the moon by 2024, end quote, according to space.com. Spacesuit engineer Christine Davis demonstrated the red, white, and blue suit designed to be worn by astronauts exploring the lunar surface, specifically at the moon's south pole, the target for NASA's next crewed lunar landing. Davis's suit is called the Exploration Extravehicular Mobility Unit for XEMU. The second updated spacesuit to be revealed was a bright orange pressure suit that will be worn by astronauts when they launch into space on the Orion capsule and return to Earth. It was demonstrated at the event by NASA spacesuit engineer Dustin Gohmert.
There are many industries contributing to the harmful effects of climate change, the fossil fuel industry being one of the most damaging, with a business model centered on heating objects at high temperatures. For more on this issue, here's Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. From boiling crude oil to molding plastic and melting steel, industrial processes often require heat, sometimes temperatures that exceed 500 degrees Fahrenheit. Producing that heat is a major source of carbon pollution, because it usually comes from burning fossil fuels.
And we haven't done very much yet to address that large bucket of emissions.
Marty Spitzer is Senior Director of Climate and Renewable Energy with the World Wildlife Fund. He helps facilitate a coalition called the Renewable Thermal Collaborative. It includes several large companies committed to reducing heating-related emissions. To warm buildings, companies may be able to transition to renewable electricity. But transforming higher-heat industrial processes is more challenging. There are clean options, such as advanced solar collectors for some processes, but these technologies are often expensive. So the large energy buyers in the collaborative aim to drive down costs by coordinating their investments. Spitzer says the work is urgent because it will take time to transform the markets and scale up new solutions.
We have to start now in order to have a chance to solve the climate challenge.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
Pennsylvania is having success with their trout stocking program, which helps support the state's multi-million dollar fishing industry. For more on the story, it's Current Cast.
A state that takes trout fishing seriously. On this Current Cast. More than 100 years ago, Pennsylvania started raising trout in hatcheries and releasing them in state waters. Today, more than 4 million adult trout are released each year. Gary Smith, is with the Pennsylvania Fish and Boat Commission.
The primary purpose of our stock trout program is to provide recreation for our anglers.
So he says when deciding how many fish to release in an area, the commission considers the number of anglers it's likely to attract. That means considering
public access, how many parking spaces are there.
Recreational fishing is an $800 million business in Pennsylvania, and with the stocking program, there are plenty of trout to go around. CurrentCast, produced with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future, and made possible by the Foundation for Pennsylvania Watersheds, online at currentcast.org.
Tribes in the Pacific Northwest are calling for the removal of Columbia River dams to restore historic salmon runs. Some warn that regional support for the dams will make the fight even more difficult compared to similar struggles to remove dams on the lower Snake River. With that story and more, it's Megan Kamrick with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Megan Kamrick in for Antonia Gonzalez. The Lummi and Yakima Nations called for removing three dams on the Columbia River to restore historic salmon runs and help the orca whales who rely on the fish. The Seattle Times reports the Bonneville, the Dalles, and John Day dams produce enough power for 2 million homes. Jay Julius, chairman of the Lummi Nation, and Joe Day Gowdy, chairman of the Yakima Nation, spoke Monday on Indigenous Peoples Day at a village near what was Celilo Falls, formerly a huge salmon fishery for thousands of years. The falls disappeared under the Dalles Dam in 1957. There have been calls for decades to remove dams on the lower Snake River, but the Seattle Times reports this call to remove these large Columbia River dams by the Lummi and Yakima is a first. In addition to generating power, the dams help provide inland navigation that helps move about $2 billion of commercial cargo annually. Julius and Gowdy said removing the dams is necessary to restore salmon runs their people depend on and help the endangered southern resident killer whales, which also rely on the salmon and face more pollution and noise. There are only 73 of the whales left. The Times reports the Columbia dams have strong regional support, and removing them could be an even bigger battle than the fights to dismantle the Snake River dams. At least 100 people turned out this week for the second annual event honoring Native young people who died at the Rapid City Indian Boarding School. The event included a walk led by Native youth. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's China Lockett reports.
It takes 9 minutes for Heather Dawn Thompson to read the names of 45 deceased children.
Ida Logan Oglala Sioux, age 18, December 15, 1918. Infant Naomi Goings.
The majority of children were from tribes in the Black Hills, but others were brought in from surrounding states. This area was part of the 1,200-acre Rapid City Indian Boarding School through the 1930s. Now it's home to recreational parks, businesses, and houses. The memorial walk is quiet, except for drums, playing alongside from a truck bed. The walk ends with a prayer at the Susan Hospital, part of Indian Health Services. It used to be a key location of the boarding school. There are children buried in this area. 69-year-old Violet Catches shares her grandmother's story.
Our grandfather and his sisters survived Wounded Knee, only to be taken away to boarding schools, and some of them not to be seen ever again.
The family identifies the grave where Mabel Holy was buried at age 18 in 1901. For National Native News, I'm Trina Lockett in Rapid City.
In Canada, thousands of First Nations residents in Manitoba who were evacuated in the wake of a massive snowstorm over the weekend are unsure when they'll be able to return home. CTV News in Winnipeg reports the Canadian Red Cross registered 5,700 evacuees in Winnipeg, Brandon, and Dauphin. Most are staying with friends or family or in hotels, with about 120 at the RBC Convention Center in Winnipeg. The Red Cross is providing meals for families at the convention center. The Winnipeg Free Press reported this is one of the largest scale evacuations coordinated by the Red Cross in recent years in Manitoba. First Nations officials say people faced no running water, no cooking, and no home dialysis, and the outages exacerbated the lack of resources and facilities in the affected communities. Some evacuees said they waited for hours for food and accommodation. The Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs and the Southern Chiefs Organization also reported some evacuees experienced racism and were turned away from some hotels that had vacancies. Manitoba Hydro said it could take a week to 10 days to fully restore power. There are concerns about where people will vote, since the federal election in Canada is less than a week away. For National Native News, I'm Megan Kamrick in for Antonia Gonzalez.
Egyptian authorities have arrested 3,000 people since protests began on the 20th of September and have begun implementing checkpoints where authorities can stop people on the street and demand to look at their phones. Officials have been rounding up street protesters, prominent government critics, and even children buying school uniforms, according to Amnesty International. NPR reports that one American who was working on a degree in Arabic was stopped at one of those checkpoints. Authorities demanded his phone, went through it, and removed him from the group he was traveling in. Egyptian officials detained him for several days until the U.S. Embassy got word from his university about his detention and arranged his release. Human rights advocates say that this is the largest crackdown against protesters during Abdel Fattah el-Sisi's 5 years as president.
The loosely organized grassroots activist group known as Extinction Rebellion has been increasing protests, demonstrations, and practicing actions of civil disobedience worldwide in an effort to draw attention to living amidst the sixth mass extinction of planet Earth. This past Monday, at the beginning of a second week of protesting, the London Metropolitan Police issued a ban on any form of protests against climate change in the city, and specifically, quote, against any assembly linked to the Extinction Rebellion autumn uprising within the Greater London area for the remainder of the week, end quote. The London protest ban came after Extinction Rebellion became the global autumn uprising on October 7th, with demonstrators lying in streets covered in fake blood and blocking entrances to buildings in major cities across the globe, including Brussels and New York City. Lawyers, lawmakers, and civil rights advocates are calling the protest ban by London Metropolitan Police a violation of the people's right to assemble.
On the border of Syria and Turkey, the Kurdish people have been facing violence from Turkish forces for over a week, prompting a U.S. delegation to travel to Ankara, Turkey, in order to arrange a ceasefire against its allies. KBU reporter Leslie McClam has more on this story.
Vice President Mike Pence and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo are scheduled to travel to Ankara, Turkey today and meet with President Erdogan's delegation on Thursday to discuss the ongoing situation at the Syrian-Turkish border. The Vice President's office announced Tuesday that the U.S. delegation would include the Secretary of State, National Security Advisor Robert O'Brien, and the Special Representative for Syria, James Jeffrey. A major goal of the trip is to discuss a ceasefire with the Turkish President, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who has already said that he has no intentions of ceasing his operations against the Kurds at the border. For 8 days, Turkish forces have been involved in violent clashes with the Kurds in the region in an attempt to turn the area in northeast Syria into a, quote, safe zone that will run nearly 260 miles from the city of Manbij in the west to the border with Iraq. Al Jazeera's Al Stratford reported that the Syrian army is based in positions around 30 kilometers, or 19 miles, from the border in various towns. That's significant because that is the depth Turkey wants to set up a safe zone. The White House had announced sanctions on the Turkish government on Monday and on any persons contributing to Turkey's destabilizing actions in northeast Syria. The Trump White House has also decided to withdraw U.S. military support from the Kurdish people in the region, saying, quote, "Our soldiers are not in harm's way, as they shouldn't be, and the Kurds are much safer right now, but the Kurds know how to fight, and as I said, they're not angels." The sanctions came days before Mr. Trump's comments about the Kurds, who are U.S. allies against ISIL in Syria, and before Pence announced today's visit to Ankara. The Turkish maneuvers at the Syrian border have sparked outrage against Turkish President Erdogan, including a march this past Saturday in downtown Portland. Since the withdrawal of U.S. support, the Kurds have been negotiating with the Syrian and Russian governments for assistance against Turkish forces.
Thank you.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 16th, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Leslie McClam, Kevin Dugan, and Claire Rosciato. The producer is also Claire Rosciato, and our engineer is Althea Billings. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Erin J. Bernard.
And I'm Clara Shotto. Stay tuned for News in Depth.
Already turned in some donations. Thank you so much. We have all this like back room that's starting to fill up. So how long will we be accepting donations for, from now until the sale?
Yes, I would say
it's time
from
for
now
News from the BOO, the weekly segment from people inside of and around KBOO with news from your community radio station.
Vice President Mike Pence and Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
And now it's time for News from the BOO, the weekly segment from people inside of and around KBOO with news from your community radio station.
Well, good evening. You are listening to News from the BOO here at KBOO Community Radio, and the bi-weekly look at what's going on inside KBOO. I'm Jenny Yokoyama, your host for this week. And right now I am sitting with our development director, Allison. Allison, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good.
So, Allison, we have the book and record sale that everybody's always really excited about. We've had tons of calls about it, but we've actually finally made an announcement. The book and record sale is happening.
Yes.
So, what are the details? When is it happening? Where is it happening?
So, the book and record sale is happening on November 23rd. That's a Saturday from noon to 9 p.m. Lagunitas generously donated a space, the Lagunitas Community Room. Yep. It's on Northeast Broadway and 2nd Street, so we're excited to be there this year.
So,